skulking. Make way. So many ways to start it.
BFM News.
Ahi ahi marie, good afternoon. Ko Natalie Shears toku ingoa, ko te tekaumarua karaka, it's 12 o'clock. Youth care residences have been found to be keeping young residents for too long. Reports obtained by RNZ outlined the Office of the Children's Commissioner's visits to the Pukatai Care and Protection Residence in Dunedin and Te Putama Arahi Rangatahi in Christchurch. Some of the children and young people encountered during the Dunedin visit had been living at the residence for over 2 years, which was attributed to long delays in securing placements. The report described the long-term stay in such environments as harmful for the young residents and that many of them were being placed far away from their whānau. Many of the young residents said that staff were not treating them with respect or maintaining their privacy. The report concluded that the issues need to be urgently addressed. And in international news, a recent report has predicted that emperor penguins will become extinct by 2100 if sea levels continue to rise. Ecologist Barbara Vinek, who co-wrote the report, told RNZ there is a chance to lose approximately 98% of the species. She continues saying how greenhouse gas emissions are reducing Antarctic ice, with penguins unable to have a proper feeding platform. Vinek explains that penguins are adapted to living on the ice, and if this melts, the penguins will have no way to survive without it. Family members of the victims of the 9/11 attacks have asked President Biden not to attend the upcoming memorial events. This comes after almost 1,800 people signed a letter calling on Biden to declassify files about the attacks, which they believe implicate Saudi officials in the plans of the attack. Last month, an ongoing lawsuit led to several former Saudi officials being questioned in court surrounding their involvement and knowledge of the attacks. However, the outcome was withheld from the victims' families. The administrations of former Presidents Bush, Obama, and Trump also refused to release these documents, saying it was a matter of national security. The family said if Biden refuses their request, he should not attend the 20th anniversary memorial ceremonies in September. And that's the news.
A 95 BFM weather update.
Anena tohu huarere mo tēnei rā, your weather forecast for Rahina, Monday the 9th of August. Right now it's partly cloudy and dry with a temperature of 10 degrees, and for the rest of the day, mostly then partly cloudy with a few showers and possible hail. Fresh southwesterly winds becoming stronger south-southwesterlies, a high of 11 degrees and an overnight low of 3. Sunrise today was at 11 past 7 and sunset will be at 20 to 6 this evening. And an outlook for the next 3 days, Ratu Tuesday, partly cloudy and sunny, periods with a few showers possible, fresh southwesterlies, Rapa Wednesday, partly to mostly cloudy with showers, southwesterlies, and Rapare Thursday, mostly fine and warmer with partly cloudy and sunny periods, light west-southwesterlies to westerly winds. That's your news and weather. I'm Natalie and the time is now 3 past 12.
That was a 95 BFM weather update, thanks to climate change.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jessica Hopkins, toko ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome back to The Wire for Rahina Monday, the 9th of August. I'm your host Jessica Hopkins and I'll be with you for the next hour. This week on our show, I'll be talking to Director of Auckland Pride, Max Tweedy, about his response to the National Party voting against conversion therapy legislation. And with this week being Money Week, I'll be talking to the Insurance Council of New Zealand about how we can navigate insurance. I'm also joined today by our producer, Louis. Louis, what have you got for us this week?
Kia ora. I've got an interview with Nick Leggett, who is the CEO of the Road Transport Forum, and we're talking about truck health and safety, which is a follow-up from last week. I'm also talking to Kelly Klink from Ngāti Rehua about dredging and dumping in the Hauraki Gulf.
Bit of a tongue twister there. Thanks, Louis. Kaua e wari wari e a hei ana koutou ki te whakarongo ki ene korero ano he pakehere roki roki mā runga e te pai tuku tuku o irirangi poho me haere ki 95BFM era kati com. And as always, you can catch our stories and more of our podcast on 95BFM's website. And if you have any thoughts on our pieces today, text 5395 or call 309-3879 to tell us what you think.
Rewire.
Their relationships with their girlfriends or their wives. Wife. No one. They shouldn't have more than one wife at a time.
Last week, the National Party was the only party to vote against the conversion practices prohibition legislation bill. The party stated that while they support the principle of banning conversion therapy, they wanted to keep parents from being prosecuted. I talked to Auckland Pride director Max Tweedy about his response to this and why National is no longer welcome at Pride. The National Party were the only party to not support the conversion practices prohibition legislation bill at its first reading. Were you surprised that they were the only party not to support it?
I was, yes. I was surprised not only because they'd previously announced their support of it and Judith Collins had said that, quote, it was the right thing to do, but I think surprised because they had issues with the legislation that were kind of like minor or technical, that they agreed with the overall principle of the legislation to ban conversion practices and you know, the way to improve a piece of legislation is to vote for it at first reading so that it can go to select committee. And so it seemed that their reasoning was quite hypocritical in the sense that they didn't support it for the reasons that they said they didn't support it for, and I think it was a wider part of the kind of culture wars that the National Party are trying to tap into at the moment, and I think this was just part of it and use trans kids as a scapegoat.
Do you think that there is a need to distinguish between conversion practices for sexuality and gender from medically transitioning or from young people taking things like puberty blockers? Do you think that that's where some of the criticism from the National Party has come from, that there's some trouble distinguishing between those?
You know, we initially, when we started the petition and the kind of campaign, we talked about conversion therapy, and I think this has, you know, through work that the Justice Ministry has done, but also work that we've done in our communities, and through especially like reports from the Counting Ourselves report that came out in 2019, showing that, you know, a reasonable number of trans and non-binary people had experienced kind of conversion practices, you know, through medical in medical environments with relating to their gender identity or gender expression. So I think this came about from an understanding that there was broader than that conversion practices were happening in scenarios that were perhaps broader than what we first thought or what was exposed back in 2018. So no, I mean, I think the principles are the same in the sense that, you know, whether you were intentionally stopping someone from taking medication that would assist you in your in kind of gender affirming healthcare, or whether, you know, it's kind of praying the gay away or praying the trans away, you know, these are similar kind of practices in terms of their intent and they should be outlawed. And I think that's kind of where we just maybe haven't had a discussion, or these things haven't been canvassed as much, but I think the intent's the same, the harm is the same, and they should be covered by the one piece of legislation. I don't think the trans and gender diverse community should have to wait for another piece of legislation. I think we can ban it all now.
And the bill does still allow people, including parents, to express their views freely on a young person or a person's sexuality or gender identity, but the National Party says that they still cannot support this bill if parents are able to be prosecuted. Do you think that this is a genuine concern, that there might be loopholes in the legislation, or is this just National's excuse, do you believe, for not supporting banning conversion therapy?
I think what the National Party is saying just isn't true. I think, you know, there's a few things on this piece of legislation that, you know, A, I don't think that we are going to see widespread criminalisation of parents. I don't think the bill sets itself up for that. I think first, you know, the bill criminalises an intent to change or suppress a person's gender identity or gender expression, if we're talking about this puberty blockers argument specifically. You know, so a parent with a medical professional is able to pause to seek, you know, more advice or more information, get a second opinion, to read more about it on the internet, chat with friends who may have trans kids, like, or chat even more with their own kids, rather. You know, these are all things that are allowed under the legislation. What isn't allowed under the legislation is that intent. So if a parent is preventing their child from taking puberty blockers because they don't want their child to, you know, I guess, start their transition, or at least get, you know, because puberty blockers don't actually start a transition, they just give a child more time to, you know, make a decision and prevent kind of changes that are more harder to reverse, you know, once they've happened. The point here is that if that's their intention, then yes, this is covered under the legislation. But the second point here is that, you know, we see that most of these cases will be dealt with under the civil redress scheme, that there's an ability in the legislation to work with the Human Rights Commission, the Human Rights Tribunal, to provide civil redress in these cases. And this is probably the avenue that will be taken when it comes to families. Now, of course, in worst case scenarios, of course, yes, this would be covered under the legislation and parents could be recommended for prosecution, but the Attorney General has to sign off on that prosecution that's covered for in the legislation. And I just cannot see a scenario in which the Attorney General is widespread signing off, prosecutions for parents based on these, you know, on kind of, I guess, less severe cases. I just don't think it's going to happen. So I think the National Party has got it wrong on this issue, and that the evidence and what's in the legislation just doesn't stack up with their argument.
And one of the things that the National Party called for during the first reading was more debate on the issue. Obviously, now that it's passed its first reading, people are able to make submissions to the Select Committee. Do you think this kind of creates an unfair environment where perhaps right-wing conservative groups are more well-resourced than the survivors that are going to be sharing their experiences to the Select Committee?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think demand the debate is more about demand the dog whistle and is about them having an ability to, you know, quote-unquote, ask questions and get answers that they're exactly kind of looking for. You know, there has been debate on this for years. And, you know, what I was most looking for too, actually, at the first reading, was that it was going to be a non-partisan issue. And I think what we see is that the rights of our rainbow community to exist without harm, without being, you know, kind of changed and put through these really harmful practices to so-called cure them, I think puts the lives of our community back up for debate. It puts our, you know, it doesn't treat us necessarily as equal human beings. That, you know, putting these things up for debate is really harmful in the first instance. But, you know, to more of your question, yes, I do think it does, you know, rear these issues back up. You know, family first will kick back into gear and, you know, and cause community harm at Select Committee. But, you know, I have no, real concern. I think, you know, the Green Party petition was signed by over 150,000 people. The TVNZ Vote Compass poll showed that I think 72% of people wanted conversion therapy banned immediately. So look, I've got no concern that at Select Committee they will be overwhelmed with positivity in regards to this bill. And I think there's a actually great opportunity at Select Committee to, you know, I mean, I don't sit here and agree that legislation is perfect. I think it's pretty good, but I think there are things that could be changed. I think there's better kind of mechanisms for survivors. I think the serious harm threshold should be lowered a bit. To ensure that, you know, we are covering as much of conversion therapy as we need to as a deterrent. So, no, I'm not necessarily concerned. Yes, we'll hear from the likes of the Family First and some religious groups, but I think we'll be overwhelmed by support at Select Committee, and I think the last couple of days have shown that.
And we saw the young Nats come out against this decision by the National Party, and there's also been reports of opposition within the party. But Auckland Pride has made the decision to not welcome National to Auckland Pride going forward. Do you think if certain party members or the Young Nats, if they came out strongly against this legislation, would they be welcome at Pride, or is this just more a blanket not welcome because they're affiliated with the party?
Well, I think the question that comes down to, you know, of being welcome or not at Pride is actually about, you know, do you support our communities, and is it more than just kind of showing up for a photo op or wanting to participate, you know, kind of a fair weather ally, if you like, or, you know, I just don't think that people who are voting against our rights, who, you know, are kind of not supporting it when it's politically expedient, even though we know the likes of Chris Bishop, who, you know, that screenshot got leaked on Twitter yesterday, obviously supports the legislation and would have liked to have voted for it. But, you know, not crossing the floor was just politically expedient. And so I think, you know, that type of cowardice and, you know, is not something that, you know, I think we can just kind of forgive or brush over. I think, you know, we need people to stand up for our human rights in Parliament, elected members. So, you know, I think it's not a generally as, you know, this individual or this or these kind of circumstances. I think anyone showing up to any Pride event, if they're not part of our communities, should be asking themselves, am I a strong enough supporter of our rainbow communities to be in this space? I don't think the National Party currently meet the criteria to answer that question with an honest yes. And, you know, I mean, but also the National Party hasn't shown up at Auckland Pride events for the last kind of 3 or so years. So I wasn't expecting them necessarily to show up anyway. But, you know, we're just kind of saying to them, hey, Pride is not an opportunity for you to show up and kind of have a party when it suits you. Your support for our communities needs to be year round.
And that was Auckland Pride director Max Tweedy. And we'll be back after a short break. You'll be listening to Skucks by Kudus.
Oh, Southbound Records, New Zealand's largest range of new vinyl, a fantastic curated selection of secondhand, plus all the accessories you need. Brushes, cleaners, sleeves, crates and more. Their in-store experts can help you out whatever genre you're into. So support your local and head into Southbound today. Southbound Records, your vinyl specialist. Pop in at 132 Simon Street or order online.
Soul Has No Tempo presents Lady Six, the Alpha Sessions, August 12th and 13th at Phoenix Cabaret. After a four-year hiatus, the Alpha Sessions are back, embodying the essence of live improvisation as Lady and her band explore new songs and rework the classics. Lady Six, the Alpha Sessions, August 12th and 13th at Phoenix Cabaret. Get your tickets now from Under the Radar.
Not all bread is created equal. In fact, some bread is pretty shit.
You might as well be spreading your Marmite on a chocolate bar.
Bread and Butter's sourdough is real bread, using ancient techniques and organic and regeneratively grown ingredients. Choose substance over speed.
Choose age and beauty.
Check out their online delivery options or head in store for brunch, great coffee and more homemade pastries than you can shake a baguette at.
Bread and Butter, the best sourdough in town.
Breadandbutter.nz.
Wow. Music's everywhere. It's like a cloud of art. Here at 95BFM, we've sucked up some of the best contemporary bangers, bottled them and chucked them into a special Spotify playlist just for you.
The August playlist features Nice Girl, Gino October, Deep State and BB Girl. Follow 95BFM on Spotify for a monthly Spotify playlist and stay au fait.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. And next up, we have a piece from Louis.
Last week, I spoke to Tokoroa-based truck driver Wayne Hill about the health, pay and safety issues in the industry. This was in response to a recent report by WorkSafe, which claimed that fatigue and low pay contributed to truckers' poor health and safety outcomes. This week, I wanted to get another perspective on the issue. So I spoke with CEO of the Road Transport Forum, Nick Leggett, who represents over 3,000 road transport companies. We talked about the pressure from consumers, company concerns, and the role of government and regulators. To start, I asked him to tell me about RTF's involvement and view on WorkSafe's report.
Well, the Road Transport Forum, which represents transport operators around New Zealand, has been involved in this preparation of the report and the work of the group since the start. So we're supportive of the findings and the recommendations that have come out of it. And we think that there's now an opportunity to actually make some change. It's quite easy in this world, I think, to identify problems, but it's much harder to solve them. So we're really looking at solutions for the trucking industry here, and we're hopeful that we will see some leadership from the government and regulators, in part with the industry and unions.
Could you just elaborate on the main findings in the report?
Yeah, I mean, the report from our perspective is around looking at the supply chain relating to transport in New Zealand. That's all the parties that help, that are part of that chain that consign goods, and the pressures that come on to transporters is often the least powerful part of that chain. And what we find is that, you know, transport's a bit of an invisible industry. We all rely on things in our houses and our lives, the food we eat, to arrive to us in a timely manner, but we don't often think about how it gets there. And 93% of New Zealand's freight travels on the back of a truck. And this, the WorkSafe report was looking at all the pressures and in and around vehicles, all of the safety factors on the road, and working out what are the things that lead to accidents, injuries, deaths in and around vehicles. Because, of course, the road is the workplace of truck drivers, and what we find is that there are many pressures on trucking operators and their drivers every day from their customers. Some of them are not even realising that. And I think we're looking at, if you consider the the inquiry into the supermarkets that's come out. That's quite a good example of where this could go if we let it. And that is that there are very powerful parties often at the top of supply chains that don't think too much about the rates they pay and the pressures they put on people at the bottom. And then looking at the safety consequences of those actions. And
so for day-to-day drivers, what are the main health and safety risks that they face then?
Well, I think things like impairment and fatigue, driving or being pressured to drive above their legal hours by customers or by customer behaviour. Sometimes it's not even an exact a deliberate pressure. It's just the environment that allows that to happen, which ends up compromising safety of drivers and safety for everybody on the road. And so we want to get these things far clearer, and we think this is a great opportunity to do that. So all people in the supply chain and the government and regulators understand the pressure that trucking operators are under. Often this is things like contractual pressure. Many trucking companies don't have any contracts. So if they say to a customer, look, I can't move that because it's going to put me in breach of my time, the response they get back is often, well, we'll just call the person down the road. See you later. And that's a terrible pressure if you're running a business. And it's a terrible pressure.
Is there not some responsibility on trucking companies as the direct employer of truckers to look after their health and safety?
Of course. And that's, that goes without saying, really. And that's what this is, we're also looking at those issues as well. But of course, 14% of trucks on the road are actually owner-drivers. They're people that run their own companies. So, and that, when you look at a lot of the pressures that come on, often the research that's been done to date by Auckland University and by and part of the research here, it's actually owner-drivers that face the biggest pressures.
So how then can companies balance the pressures from suppliers and consumers alongside health and safety issues for their drivers?
Well, health and safety always must come first. So it's not a balance, it's a priority. Health and safety must be the priority. But what we need is clear air, I think, to discuss these findings with customers of the industry, with those higher in the supply chain, and to get them to recognise that, the decisions they make, the rates they pay, the conditions that they put in place actually have a downstream impact on trucking operators being able to operate safely. And we need the government and regulators to not just release research like this, but actually stand shoulder to shoulder with the industry in demanding, contracts, fair terms and conditions, fair terms of trade, reasonable rates, so they can operate as safely as possible, and also driving hours and expectations around delivery that don't compromise driving hours.
Given that trucking appears to be being phased out by the government for more environmentally friendly alternatives like self-driving and train, I think is there incentive for government and for major regulators to actually make the change?
Phased out. I mean, you can't phase something out to something that doesn't exist yet. So there are going to be people driving trucks for a very long time to come, and they'll be driving trucks. Hopefully we will see some improvement in the sort of things that power trucks, but that technology doesn't exist yet either. So, this is a reality here and now, and frankly, you can't say, if people are being injured and dying on our roads and in our workplaces today, tomorrow and the day after, we're not going to do anything because, there's technology change around the corner, somewhere around the corner, some date that we can't yet identify. No, that's not acceptable. We've got, there's a live challenge here. And, if one person is dying on the job anywhere in New Zealand, I think there's a responsibility for all of us to do what we can to improve that and reduce the risk of it happening to anybody else.
That was CEO of the Road Transport Forum, Nick Leggett, speaking on health, safety and pay conditions for truck drivers. Next up, you're listening to In the Middle by Darcy Clay.
In the middle of the night of the broader light, I'll be taking off your clothes. Everything gonna be alright. Everybody know I got a habit being uptight. Like latex, baby, ooh, you drive me crazy, ooh. I left my home in Alabama, raised 107, looking for a life. I got to know where she's coming. The second best thing was a wrestling than the resting, but ooh, I got to know where she's coming. Did she ever say she gonna come undone too? And no. She said she's gonna love ya. She said she's gonna love ya. But did she ever say she gonna come undone too? No. Said she's gonna love you and love only you. She walked into a room. I must confess, I'm right here and now, girl. The attraction was purely physical. She said a lot of made a sense to me, but she also said a lot of don't. She didn't know what I was on about. But in the middle of the night of the broad daylight, ooh, I'll be taking off your clothes. Everything gonna be alright, ooh. I got a habit of being uptight, like latex, baby, ooh. Oh, you drive me crazy, oh. You drive me crazy, yeah, oh, I know. You drive me crazy, oh.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
The Environmental Protection Agency and Ports of Auckland have been given consent to deepen the Rangitoto Channel and dump the material near Aotea Great Barrier Island. However, Ngāti Rehua, who are the local iwi, alongside other iwi and environmental groups, have called for the consent to be cancelled. They argue that the EPA ignored principles of Matauranga Māori in the coinciding environmental impacts. I spoke to Ngāti Rehua's Kelly Klink about the consent and the coinciding judicial review that they're going towards. To start, I asked her to tell me about the judicial review.
So the judicial review came about because there's five non-notified dump sites around Aotearoa, one being the CDS, the Kuvia dump site. And that means that the Environmental Protection Authority governs the resource consents or the consent applications are to dump within those sites. This means that they do not have to have any consultation with Mana Whenua and these consents are granted. So back in 2019, when we were in court against the EPA versus Coastal Resources Limited, we had stopped a 250,000 cubic metre consent application from being dumped at the northern disposal area just off the coast of Aotea. So this judicial review is a two-prong attack. So the first one is under the EEZ Act of 2012, which is a dump site. The second part, which we are already in the Environment Court, is through the dredging application for the Waikamata and Rangitoto Channel. And so we're in court now fighting that issue on the dredging. The judicial review is in response to the second part of the application.
So just specifically, what are the concerns around ignorance of Matauranga Māori in the review?
There's been none. So when you don't have any collaboration with Māori, where's the Matauranga in that? They are looking at through a Western lens that they, the site, is the damage will be negligible, as they say, is throughout the statement. And for us as Māori, we don't see it in that way. There's life forms under the ecosystems that are out there in that space. There's already been noted in the Golder report of 2018 that there are threatened to at-risk whales and dolphin species within that space. And if you look at the continental shelf, which is the exclusive economic zone in the Continental Shelf Act, which was established in 2012, that runs right through the Pacific Current. And that, you know, through the seasons, you're seeing mass migrations of whales coming through those spaces. And right through there, this is where they're dumping. So, you know, dumping near or in.
So was there any attempt by the EPA to involve Māori voices?
No, but see, this is the issue. It's a non-notified, so legally they don't have to. And what we're trying to do is see those non-notified dump sites overturned so that there is mātauranga Māori being voiced within those consents. And also that to make sure those who are most effective are able to have a say within that space as well. So that's the issue, is that they are non-notified. We do need to see them overturned, and we're working vigilantly to see that happen. And I suppose that's really why we're pushing the judicial review, is to really raise that awareness, what's happening in the Moana. You know, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep up these draconian practices. They're outdated. They're no longer relevant in today's world. We know that there's a climate crisis, and yet we still are participating in this by dumping in the Moana. They think that going miles out to sea is going to be okay, and we're saying, no, it's not. And I think the mātauranga that we kōrero to is about our traditional fishing grounds, and especially out at the NDA, at the Northern Disposal Area, our whāpapa grounds have been wiped out. And we're going to see the same here at the CDS site.
Yeah, on that, is the concern with general dredging and dumping in the Hauraki Gulf, or is it just instances where consent has been given in areas where there are Māori traditional fishing grounds?
No, I think it should be throughout Aotearoa, whether it is in the so-called Pākehā construct of Hauraki Gulf. Because if you remember, the Hauraki Gulf only sits within the RMA. When they're talking about where they're dumping, that's outside this Pākehā construct of the Hauraki Gulf. So what we're trying to educate is about our tūpuna moana, which was Te Moana Nui o Toi Te Huatahi. I'm 31 generations from that tūpuna, and that ocean covers all of that area from the EZ and the RMA. So yeah, it's about, I think that we need to move away from dumping altogether within the Moana and look at healthy alternatives, whether it be mudcrete and placing it in on land. But we do need to start shifting away into a more environmentally friendly space.
Could you just elaborate on what those alternatives could be? You mentioned mudcrete. What are some others?
Mudcrete or reclamation. Look, we know at the moment with sea level rising that a lot of urupā around the country are putting up seawalls to protect their tūpuna, and we've seen a lot of, especially out of Aotea, a lot of koi we've been exposed, you know, our tūpuna bones coming out of those sand dunes and all sorts of stuff. So whether it's reclamation on land, you can use it on roading. Mudcrete can be used on the basin of roading. There's a lot of uses for mudcrete. And what mudcrete does is it locks in any toxins. And after the Sky City fire, you know, they used 24 million litres of water. 1.8 million litres went into the Waitemata. And after testing, they found that it was high in chromium arsenic. So all of those toxins come out into our moana. But if it gets locked into mudcrete, it gets locked in and it doesn't expose. And we can use that for all sorts of things around the country. And I think we just need to, yes, it's going to cost more, but it's going to be healthier in the long run. It's going to be better for not just for Māori, but for the community, for the whole, for all of New Zealand, if we look at healthy alternatives.
Moving on slightly, you have previously said that the Crown Agency involved in the EPA was not listened to. And a press release from Protect Aotea said that the dismissal of Motoronga Māori is commonplace in Crown agencies. For environmental issues, do you feel like Māori involvement is treated only as a symbolic gesture?
Of course, it's a box-ticking process, and that's why I want to move away from the term consultation and really bring it back into moving into collaboration. Because what they do is they get, you know, for Māori, it's such a long, drawn-out process, because once you go and have a hui with a hapu iwi, you know, that can take a little bit of time, but it's the proper process and the tikanga that needs to happen. And what we're seeing is sometimes is that they'll just get a Māori and then tick a box and go, well, that's the iwi and hapu taken care of, and it's actually not right. And we've seen it a few times, and I found it in court recently, where even Pākehā environmental groups are now trying to speak for mana whenua. And we're losing our voice within these spaces, and I think we need to bring it back to a proper tikanga process where there's collaboration with those affected parties within the areas.
That was Ngāti Rehu. Ngāti Rehu is Kelly Clink. Next up, we're on to an ad break, but we'll be back soon.
Nominations for the AUSA Student Executive 2022 are now open. If you're passionate about making a difference to student life and don't mind getting paid for the pleasure, there are 9 roles available, including President, Women's Rights Officer, Queer Rights Officer, and more. Whether you're into party planning, social justice, or you're just thirsty for power, there's a role for you in the AUSA Exec. Nominations close Friday, August the 13th, so get yourself nominated today. Go to ausa.org.nz/elections.
Oh, what a beautiful moment. The sun's setting all purple and gold. Oh.
You can still see where your dad hired a plane to skywrite. Actually, I am proud of you.
Yeah. I wish I had somewhere to capture this memory. Just, you know, a static image to immortalise this moment.
Look, 1,000 butterflies.
Take a picture. It'll last longer. And whatever your level, you'll take better ones with Pro Gear. 100% camera, 0% bullshit. Pro Gear, 3 Railway Street, Newmarket. Or go to progear.co.nz.
The Buzz are back for Spring Jam, performing a final tribute to Aaron Tokuna's Ahori Buzz, with an all-star lineup including Daniel Meatman, Paul McLaney, Jimmy Carter, and more. And support from Lawton Cora, Dilla Strait, and DJ Hudge. Don't miss out on this epic showcase of some of New Zealand's greatest musicians. Spring Jam at the Power Station, Friday, 27 August. Get your tickets now from AAAticketing.co.nz.
Wow. Music's everywhere. It's like a cloud of art. Here at 95BFM, we've sucked up some of the best contemporary bangers, bottled them and chucked them into a special Spotify playlist just for you.
The August playlist features Nice Girl, Gino October, Deep State and BB Girl. Follow 95BFM on Spotify for our monthly Spotify playlist and stay au fait.
I don't know, and frankly, the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
With this week being Money Week, the Insurance Council of New Zealand is calling for people to make sure they understand their insurance. According to the council, new research shows that there is widespread insurance apathy and a lack of understanding of insurance in New Zealand. I spoke to Leah McNeil from the Insurance Council about how people can become more financially resilient.
So, and Money Week is an opportunity for us to encourage people to check their insurance. So we have launched today a quiz which asks people a series of questions about the three most commonly misunderstood areas of their insurance policies, and encouraging them to have a look at their policies for one day during this week, creating a bit of an insurance day so they understand what they're covered for should they need it at any point.
And you recently commissioned some research that showed that there's a widespread lack of understanding of insurance here in New Zealand. What did this research reveal about the habits of people in New Zealand when it comes to insurance?
So we regularly do research for our members, and in our most recent quarterly survey, we found, and it's been ongoing, this lack of understanding for a number of quarters, and so that's why we wanted to share these insights for Money Week. So our survey tells us that only 54% of Kiwis have declared any understanding of what their insurance policy covers them for. And we know this to be quite concerning. It's a concerning stat in itself, but what's more concerning is that we know this number will actually be a lot lower. So backed up by research out of Australia, we know that people have a great apathy towards their reading of their policies. Many people don't read their policies. Most people don't read their policies, spend too little time on it, and are overconfident in their understanding. So we expect that if you don't read your policy, you can't understand what you're covered for. So that we expect that 54% actually to be lower, which is really concerning.
And what do you think has led to this sort of apathy here in New Zealand? Do you think people in New Zealand are less open when it comes to talking about money and asking for help?
I think there is definitely that. I think that could be part of it. I also think that, as we know, insurance isn't a fun thing. It's not a something that you want to talk about or look at. But the reality is that it renews annually. You should check it annually, and you should check that you have the right cover to meet your needs. And we need to be grown-ups about this and have grown-up discussions and understand that our needs change and our insurance should change to fit that. So when you call for it or you make a claim on your insurance policy, that you're going to get the cover that you expect. And I suppose insurance, as I said before, it's not a fun thing to look at. But it's a really important part of your financial resilience, especially should the worst or the unexpected happen.
And what steps can people take to improve their financial resilience or well-being?
Well, the first step is read your insurance policy. The second point would be to understand what some of those terms and conditions within your policy are. And if you don't understand them, ask your insurer to explain them. If you have any misunderstandings about sum insured or what excess you might be expected to pay or how your policy will respond to sudden or gradual damage, they are the types of things that you should ask your insurer about. And you can also find resources online. We have a number of consumer guides on these topics and a variety of other topics that can help you understand your insurance and what cover you should have to meet your needs for if you have to claim for any of these events.
Would you be able to provide any insight on what some of those most common misunderstandings are about insurance?
Well, we understand from our research, and it's backed up by the Insurance and Financial Services Ombudsman, that sum insured, excesses, and sudden or gradual damage, or the difference between sudden and gradual damage, are three of the most common areas of misunderstanding. These appear in the top five complaint areas with the Ombudsman each year, most years. Understanding how to calculate your sum insured is understanding all the wider things that may need to be covered within that figure. We highly recommend using an online calculator or seeking expert advice about what that sum insured should be. these tools or resources will help you understand the wider costs around rebuilding your house should you experience a total loss. And there'll be things that you won't necessarily think about if you try to work it out yourself. Things like removal of asbestos and removal of debris from a property, should you need stronger foundations, building consents, cost of building supplies. And online calculators also provide the index, so they move with inflation. And so it's really important to regularly check your sum insured on these calculators to make sure you have it right. Things like excesses, we actually expect that people do understand excesses, but it's a bit of that grudge part of your insurance, in that it's the small part that you have to pay on top of your premiums if you make a claim. However, it should be considered as your part of the ongoing risk that you've transferred to your insurer. So you pay a small bit, the insurer tops up the rest, and you get back on your feet quickly and reasonably and back to where you were before the loss happened. Sudden and gradual damage is something that's often questioned or queried and can be confusing to understand. But although you may suddenly see a leak, it may not have been suddenly happening. So that's important to understand how your policy will cover you for the difference between a sudden event or a gradual event. So a sudden event is something like a fire or a burglary or a burst water pipe, whereas a gradual event will be a tap behind your washing machine slowly leaking over a period of time. Now, where you'll have cover in most policies, you'll have cover for the damage caused by that leak that's been happening for months, but you won't have cover to repair the leak itself. So it's important to check your policy and understand how it would apply in those situations and understand what situation you'd be in to repair that damage.
Do you feel that there's enough resources or initiatives out there that people are able to become more aware of this? For example, do you feel like it would benefit if this was included more in our education curriculums at a young age, that people are more familiar with the importance of financial resilience?
I completely agree, and that's why we actually sponsor Banker. They have an in-school program which they run in our schools to help improve students' understanding of the basics of financial literacy. And this starts at a young age and also moves through into their modules for Banker High. And we have provided input into the insurance modules that are part of their program, which teach people and students the basics around thinking about insurance in ways that apply to them. And so it may help them in the money side of things, where they partner with other people, such as Kiwi Bank. They may talk to them about compounding interest and how putting your money in a savings account would benefit you. And in insurance, they look at what would happen if you had an accident in your car and you didn't have insurance. What would be the benefit or the disadvantage of not having insurance in place to get you back or repair that damage to your car? So, and learning about finance and insurance and the role it plays and making sure that you can get back on your feet when the unexpected happens is really important, and it's something that we need to talk to our children about as young as we can.
And to summarise, the Insurance Council is calling for people to dedicate an insurance day during Money Week. What are some of the things that people should be checking for?
Yes, so during Money Week, because we know people don't check their policies, we're trying to motivate people to use one day this week to pick up your policy, really have a look at it, have a read of it, and see if you understand all the aspects of your policy. And to ask your insurer or to look into for resources and insights to answer any questions that you may have about your policy. Insurance Day is important because it means that you'll then understand what cover you have in place and how that policy will help you to recover should the unexpected happen. So when people take a day this week to check their policy as their Insurance Day for the year, it's important to check things like your excess, to understand how your premium's broken down and what it covers you for, to look and make sure that you've got, if you have a house policy, that you have the right sum insured for that house policy, and to take a moment to check an online calculator to check that the amount you have is still accurate, to check any other terms and conditions in your policy in terms of how it applies for sudden or gradual damage. And generally, if you have any questions, to ask your insurer and get in touch with them, say, look, I don't understand this part of my policy. Can you walk me through this and help me understand? And then make any changes as needed to ensure that they're insurance.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hotaka katoa mo tene wiki, ne te mihi ki a koto katoa I korero mai ki o mo tene ra. That's a wrap on The Wire with Jessica. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today and to our producer Louis for some awesome pieces today. Ni ra hoki te mihi ki a koto I whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.